We're continuing the chapter 11. Krishna's been traveling through Dwarka. He's finally reached the capital, and all sorts of people are coming out to meet him. The artists, the dancers, the genealogists, the prostitutes, everybody. Everybody's in ecstasy seeing Krishna. Rajamargam gate Krishne Dwarakaya kulastriyaha harmyanya ruruhur vipra tarikshana mahotsavaha. When Lord Krishna passed over the public roads, all the ladies from the respectable families of Dwarka went up to the roofs of their palaces just to have a look at the Lord. They considered this to be the greatest festival. Rajamargam gate Krishna Dwarakaya kulaspriya. Kulaspriya means the women of respectable families. Kulaspriya. That's also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. Kulaspriya. The women of respectable families. Harmyani avruruhu vipra tadikshana mahotsava. Just to see Krishna is a great festival. And Prabhupada points out there's no difference between the Lord in the temple and the Lord in person. Therefore, festivities in the temple of the Lord, as held generally, are like festivals performed during the manifestive days of the Lord of Dwarka about 5,000 years ago. No difference. And Harmyan Yaruruhur Vipra. Again, the ladies saw the Lord from the tops of the palaces. The ladies did not mix with the crowd on the street, and thus their respectability was perfectly observed. There was no artificial equality with the man. Female respectability is preserved more elegantly by keeping the woman separate from the man. The sexes should not mix unrestrictedly. Any question? Comments on this verse?
I remember it's in Radha Ramanandi in Vrindavan, Shijamastami. No women were sitting on the top.
Oh, yeah.
Upstairs.
In Vrindavan, these things are quite strictly observed. You'll see the ladies there with their saris like that. Mm-hmm. Not that, you know, every man on the street can gawk at her. I've visited Srivats Goswami so many times. I've heard his wife's voice so many times. I've never seen her. Yes.
The most amazing thing is this tradition is maintained by the women.
Yeah.
They are the ones who do.
It's not that it's considered a great privilege to mix with the men, and, you know, why don't we get a chance? But as Prabhupada points out here, that it's their respectability is maintained in this way. It's an asset. It's an asset. Mm-hmm.
Also, Shambhala was pointing out that women's liberation is a tricky idea of elastic men. That they can cope with this woman's liberation, to enjoy it.
That's the Shivas Goswami? I don't know. Anyway, go ahead. I meant Padmanabha Goswami, I said Shivas Goswami. I was thinking of Padmanabha. Yes, go ahead. Tell me again.
Yeah, that women's liberation idea is not coming from women, it's coming from lusty men who want to have free access to exploit women.
Well, it's coming from both sides. And in fairness, there are some legitimate concerns in the Western women's liberation movement in that men in the West behave like dogs. And there are some legitimate complaints from the women's side. Unfortunately, as Prahlad Maharaj says, the cure is worse than the disease. So they, in the interest of solving one problem, they create other problems for themselves, for their children, for society in general. So it's unfortunate. Therefore, the cow was lamenting. The bull was asking, the cow was asking the bull, are you lamenting for the sake of women who are abandoned by, exploited by unscrupulous men? This is Kali Yuga. So, on both sides. Men are cats and dogs, and women are cats and dogs in Kali Yuga. Some other point?
Does Krishna appear in the deity only after the installation, or if a great devotee comes into a temple where the deity is not properly installed, idol worship you could practically say, will Krishna suddenly appear?
Krishna is there anyway. Matsthani sarvabhutani nachaham teshu vastata andantarasta paramana jayantarasta. Krishna is everywhere. He's everywhere. But the presence of the Lord is properly appreciated when the Lord is worshipped in the regular way. Even in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, you can see Krishna deities, even dressed up a little bit. But his presence is not fully appreciated. He's appreciated as a work of art. And the devotees may go and see the practically keeping the deity as a prisoner in this, in their museum. But Krishna is there. He's everywhere. But service is not there. That's the thing that's missing. Krishna is there in the museum, but devotional service, the mood of devotional service is there, isn't there. That's why it's a museum and not a temple. There was some exhibit in a Swedish museum, they wanted to liven things up again, liven things up. So they had some exhibit of, some temple exhibit, but they had Vegavan Prabhu actually turn it into a real temple with puja and prasadam and everything. So Krishna was there all along, but suddenly his presence became manifest because of devotional service. Yes? Something else?
Srila Prabhupada and Prabhupada said that deity in the temple is basically when we cannot see Krishna in the heart.
No. Because we can't see Krishna in the heart?
Yeah. Not in this purpose.
Oh. Yeah, it means the pure devotees have the facility of seeing Krishna always within the heart. But for those of us who don't have such a facility, the Lord appears as the deity. Just like sometimes you'll see some very big Bhagavatam recitation, and the speaker is sitting, but so many people are attending that if you're in the back, he's like a football field away. So then they'll have television monitors. So for those who can't see directly, the television monitor is there, so you can see the speaker and his expressions and so on. Otherwise, those who are up close can see him directly. It's something like that. Yes?
In Varanasi, in 78, Pujari was doing puja. And just puja start, immediately some monitors came and some people came. And beat the devotees, destroyed the temple, and broke the deity. So how is that?
How is it means what?
That Krishna is personally present there.
Yeah, but because he's in the form of the deity, he's not protesting. And they're thinking they've destroyed the deity, but the deity's still there. Krishna is still there. Maybe they've the form is no longer manifest, but Krishna is still there. They can't destroy, they can't kill Krishna.
Along this point that Chaudhrabhad was mentioning in one class, that at one point there was a some kind of protest movement against post services and people were destroying.
Against which services?
Postal services,
yeah.
And people were
destroying the mailboxes.
The mailboxes, and they were thinking that by destroying mailboxes,
they've destroyed the postal service.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't happen like that. Shall we go on? Nityam nirikshamananam yadapi dvarakaukasam navitripyanti hidrusha shriyo dhamangamachutam. The inhabitants of Dwarka were regularly accustomed to look upon the reservoir of all beauty, the infallible Lord, yet they were never satiated. In Nectar of Devotion, we learn that among the ecstatic components of rasa, or the transcendental taste of devotional service, one component is vibhav, which means, someone knows?
Lord expands himself to the...
No, that's a different thing. The vibhav.
It's not the vibhav.
Vibhav, someone knows what it is? That which stimulates one's love for Krishna. It's called vibhav. And Krishna himself and his devotees, as well as objects that remind us of Krishna, all serve as sources of stimulation for natural love. So here, seeing Krishna stimulated the Dwarkavasis' natural love for Krishna. Krishna himself was the object of stimulation, ecstasy. They were able to see him directly, nirikshamananam, but although they saw him every day, nityam, they never tired of seeing him, navitripyanti. Srila Prabhupada comments, they never thought that they had previously, many times, seen the beautiful body of the infallible Lord. This indicates that they had no satiation in desiring to see the Lord. Anything material seen for a number of times ultimately becomes unattractive by the law of satiation. The law of satiation acts materially, but there's no scope for it in the spiritual realm. That's because Krishna is infallible. The living entities are fallible because when they come in contact with the material world, they lack their spiritual identity. And thus the body materially obtained becomes subjected to birth, growth, transformation, situation, deterioration, and annihilation under the laws of nature. The Lord's body is not like that. He descends as he is and is never under the laws of the material modes. Body is the reservoir of all beauty, Shriyo Dhamangam. His body is the source of everything that be, the reservoir of all beauties beyond our experience. No one, therefore, is satiated by seeing the transcendental body of the Lord, because because there are always manifestations of newer and newer beauties. The transcendental name, form, qualities, entourage, etc. are all spiritual manifestations, and there's no satiation in chanting the holy name of the Lord, no satiation in discussing the qualities of the Lord, no limitation of the entourage of the Lord. He's the source of all and is limitless. Now this is Achyuta, Krishna. The pure devotees never get tired of seeing Krishna, hearing about Krishna, talking about Krishna. This is their transcendental pleasure. Any questions here? None at all. Okay. Move on. Shriyo Nivaso Yasyoda Panapatram Mukham Drisham Pahavo Lokapalanam Saranganam Padambujam. The Lord's chest is the abode of the goddess of fortune. His moon-like face is the drinking vessel for eyes which hanker after all that is beautiful. His arms are the resting places for the administrative demigods, and his lotus feet are the refuge of pure devotees who never talk or sing of any subject except his lordship. Here, Srila Jiva Goswami says that all the features described here are impetuses to ecstatic love. Again, this is the benefit of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, that the topics in the Bhagavatam stimulate our devotion to Krishna. The topics themselves stimulate our devotion to Krishna. And the features of Krishna here stimulated the love of his devotees. Prabhupada said, those who are artists, overtaken by the beautiful creation, should better see to the beautiful face of the Lord for complete satisfaction. The face of the Lord is the embodiment of beauty. What they call beautiful nature is but his smile, and what they call the sweet songs of the birds are but specimens of the whispering voice of the Lord. In the second canto we find such descriptions of the universal form of the Lord, but here we've come to the Lord's own personal form, where, practically speaking, the wonderful features of the Lord are beyond fully describing. There are administrative demigods in charge of departmental service of cosmic management, and there are tiny administrative gods in state service. They're always afraid of other competitors, but if they take shelter of the arms of the Lord can protect them always from the attacks of enemies. A faithful servant of the Lord engaged in the service of administration is the ideal executive head and can well protect the interest of the people in general. Other so-called administrators are symbols of anachronisms leading to the acute distress of the people governed by them. The administrators can remain safely under the protection of the arms of the Lord. Again, Prabhupada's making this point. The kshatriyas are supposed to be the arms of the Lord, which means they should take shelter of the Lord. Otherwise, they become sources of acute distress for the people. And Srila Prabhupada, toward the end of the purports, quotes a song from Srila Jiva Goswami, Srila Rupa Goswami. It's found in his Stavamala. Krishna Deva Bhavantam Vande Man Manasa Marukaram Arpaya Nijapada Pankaja Makarande. O my Lord Krishna, I beg to offer my prayers unto you. My mind is like the bee, and it's after some honey. Kindly, therefore, give my bee mind a place at your lotus feet, which are the resources for all transcendental honey. Yadapi samarishu vidhirapi pashyati natava nakagra marichin idamich chami nishamya tabachuta tadapi kripadaputa vichin. I know that even big demigods like Brahma do not see the rays of the nails of your lotus feet, even though they are engaged in deep meditation for years together. Still, O infallible one, my ambition is such, for you are very beautiful to your surrendered devotees. Bhaktiru danchati yadyapi madhava natvayi mamatila matri padame sharata tadapi tabarika durgata ghatana vidhatri. O Madhava, I know also that I have no genuine devotion for the service of your lotus feet. But because your lordship is inconceivably powerful, you can do what is impossible to be done. Ayam avilolatayadya sanatana kalitadbhuta rasabharam nivasatu nityam ihamrita nindati vindan madhurima saram. Your lotus feet can deride even the nectar of the heavenly planets, the heavenly kingdom. Therefore, I am very much attracted by them. O Supreme Eternal, please therefore let my mind be fixed at your lotus feet, so that eternally I may be able to relish the taste of your transcendental service. Prabhupada comments, the devotees are satisfied with being placed at the lotus feet of the Lord and have no ambition to see his all-beautiful face or aspire for the protection of the strong arms of the Lord. They're humble by nature, and the Lord is always leaning towards such humble devotees. Shriyo nivaso yasyo panapatram lukambhusham bahavo lokapalanam saranganam padambhusham. So Lakshmi's on his chest and Panapatra, his eyes are the drinking vessel. His moon-like face is the drinking vessel for the eyes. His arms are the resting places for the lokapalas, the demigods or administrators of the universe. And saranganam padambhujam. And the sarangan, the devotees, are the ones who are at its lotus feet. Prabhupada comments on Saram? Yeah. He's called the Saram, the essence of everything. And those who sing and talk about him are called the Sarangas, the pure devotees. Yes?
You mentioned in the beginning that Chief Goswami says that this verse is.
It's a source of. That the features described are all impetuses to ecstatic love. Vibhav. Vibhav. There's anubhav, vibhav, sancharibhav, yavacharibhav, sthayibhav. Five different elements that together pull together rus, taste. So vibhav means stimulation to ecstatic love. They're the form of the Lord, the qualities of the Lord, the associates of the Lord, the conch shell of the Lord, the tulsi plant associated with the Lord, the devotees of the Lord. These all stimulate love for Krishna. The dress of the Lord, the face of the Lord, here the arms of the Lord, the lotus feet of the Lord, his moon-like face, his chest, his arms, his lotus feet, these are all sources of ecstasy for the devotees. They all stimulate ecstatic feeling within the devotees. So that's called vibhav. That has different divisions. Arambhana, Udipana. And that's further divided. and the second part of Nectar of Devotion, the southern side of Nectar of Devotion, these things are discussed quite elaborately.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, the particular order here that they're describing the Lord's characteristics, here they're starting with the chest and then the face. Mm. Is this any particular, because we've seen like in Queen Kunti's explanation.
Yeah, I haven't seen a comment on it from the Acharyas or Prabhupada. It starts from the top and goes down to the bottom. No, it doesn't even. It starts from his chest and goes up to his face, comes down to his arms, and then reaches down to his feet. Sudha Goswami was in ecstasy, so he's simply describing these things without observing any particular order. Something else? Sitata patra vyajana rupaskrita prasuna varshar ravi varshita pati pishangavasa vanamalaya babho kano yatarko dupachapa vajutai. As the Lord passed along the public road of Dwarka, his head was protected from the sunshine by a white umbrella. White feathered fans moved in semicircles, and showers of flowers fell upon the road. His yellow garments and garlands of flowers made it appear as if a dark cloud were surrounded simultaneously by sun, moon, lightning, and rainbows. Well, this is a nice figure. Prabhupada explains the umbrella to be the sun, the chamaras to be the moon. Prabhupada says the stars are the lightning, but it seems like the flowers are the lightning. And his garments are the rainbow. That's the comparison. Prabhupada says the natural phenomena couldn't appear all at one time, but the Lord is all powerful, and in his presence, anything impossible can be made possible by his inconceivable energy. The situation created at the time of his passing on the roads of Dwarka was beautiful and could not be compared to anything besides the description of natural phenomena. You can just picture this. Krishna's passing on the road, and the bright yellow garments and the umbrella over his head and the chamaras fanning him and flowers being showered, Prasuna Varshai, showers of flowers. So all of this is going on. So it appeared something like clouds and the sun. Clouds are meant, he's the cloud, Krishna himself is the dark cloud, Kana. And Arka, the sun and the moon, the rainbow, the lightning, all together at once. Anything here? Comments? Questions? Pravishtastu griham pitro pravishakta parishvakta svamatribhi bhavande shirasa sapta devaki pramukha muda. After entering the house of his father, he was embraced by the mother's present, and the Lord offered his obeisances unto them by placing his head at their feet. The mothers were headed by Devaki, his real mother. Pravishtastu griham pitro. So he entered his father's house, and Parishvakta, he was embraced by all of his mothers, Swamatribhi, his own mothers, headed by Devaki, Devaki Pramukha, Muda, in great happiness, Atmamata guru patni brahmani rajapatnika tenur dhatri tata prithvi saptayata matarasmita. This is Chanakya. He says that these are the seven mothers. Atmamata, the mother from whom one is born, and guru patni, the wife of the spiritual master, and brahmani, the wife of a Brahmin, Rajapatnika, the queen, Dhenu, the cow, Tatri, nurse, Tata Prithvi, Mother Earth. These are the seven mothers, and it's commented here that the stepmothers, they were Guru Patni. They're the wives of the Guru, because the father was as good as Guru. In Bhagavad Gita, Deva Dvija Guru Pragya Pujanam Shariram Tapa Uchate. To worship the Lord, the Brahmins, the spiritual master, and respected persons is austerity of the body and goodness. Apart from austerity and good conduct, this affection was there equally among in the family. Not that only the birth mother was affectionate, but all the family members, especially the maternal affection, would be there from the stepmothers very strongly. Lord Ram also, he showed his ungrudging obedience to his stepmother. These things were there. Bhavanda, Bhavande, Shirasa, Sapta. He offered his obeisances, placing his head at the feet of the mothers. This is, you know, we hear how in Indian civilization, women are so downtrodden and ill-treated, but here we find how even the Supreme Lord is respecting his mother. Or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is described as being the greatest of devotees of mothers. So in Vedic society, the mother is given so much respect. The order of the mother is very strong, the respect given to the mother. And the Lord himself showed the example. And Chanakya also says, what is that? Matravat paradareshu. And the other women should also be seen, should be respected like one's own mother. There's one story, it's a history actually, it comes up in Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago, his history of the Stalin era in Russia. And he talks about, he gives one incident where, you know, the secret police or the state police were like super powerful, everybody's in fear of these guys. They have a quota for carrying people off. They knock on your door and you're gone. They're just like eating up the citizens, shipping them off to the camps off in Siberia, and everybody's afraid of them. Anyway, the incident was that some soldiers on the street were harassing some older women, and some young woman was there and just started chewing them out. Like, what do you think you're doing? These are your mothers. You know, the guys are there with their guns. They could just like, boom, throw them in the wagon and take them off. You know, but the girl just told him, what do you think you're doing? Have you no shame? These are your mothers. And the soldiers just like sheepishly backed off. Because it was true. and that in every civilized country, that sense is there, that the elderly women are like the mother, or any woman, Chanakya says. So they had to back off. Matravat Paradharanshi. Anything else? No? Okay. Ta putram ankamaropya sneha snuta payodhara harsha vivvalitatmana shishitshur netrajayar jalaihi. The mothers, after embracing their son, sat him on their laps. Due to pure affection, milk sprang from their breasts. They were overwhelmed with delight, and the tears from their eyes wetted the Lord. Here we have, this is another feature of ecstasy, called anubhav. Anyone know what anubhav is now that we did vibhav?
The symptoms. The symptoms of ecstasy.
Yeah. From the ecstasy. They come from the ecstasy. It stimulates the ecstasy. It comes after.
Yeah, anu means following.
Following.
Prabhupada calls it subsequent ecstasy. And in essence, he says it's the bodily symptoms manifested by a devotee in expressing ecstatic love for Krishna. Dhanadhar Maharaj explains in Waves of Devotion, when one's eternal affection for Krishna heightens, it must be expressed in various activities such as dancing, laughing, etc. For example, a servant's ecstatic love heightens by seeing his master, and he expresses it outwardly by offering obeisances. Offering obeisances not only expresses the servant's affection, it further intensifies and confirms it. Thus, anubhav is not merely a physical action, but an emotional component, which both relieves and reinforces the ecstatic love built up in the devotee's heart. If you think of another kind of emotion contrary to this, think of anger. You know, anger builds up, builds up, builds up, builds up. And then you just get so angry, you slam your fist on the desk. And that, to some extent, relieves your feeling of anger. It expresses your feeling of anger. But may also, at the same time, just confirms that anger and reinforces the feeling. So, similarly, here, the ladies were feeling this strong affection for Krishna. And they embraced him, they put him on their laps, milk sprang from their breasts, tears came from their eyes. So these were all anubhav, expressions of ecstasy, the expressions of ecstatic feeling, and they add to the feeling, they reinforce the feeling, they become a part of that expression. Anything else here?
It's interesting that these days I've heard that many mothers can't even breastfeed their kids. They have to give them some goats. Goat's milk or something like this. In Australia, I've seen, like, in the supermarkets, they've got these special. It's for babies, because if the mothers can't give their children even milk, then they'll
I'm not so familiar with it. But then again, in Kali Yuga, they're avoiding. You know, they don't want to feed their children. It's a botheration. It gets in the way of their career and their, you know, everything else that's going on. So they're somehow or other avoiding the whole business. And, you know, who is that company? Nestle or whoever it is. They're the substitute. And the result is the people who deal with third world nutrition know all about this, that there's a lot of nutritional deficit that the infants have because they're not breastfed by their mothers. And I suppose the psychologist would tell us that there's psychological deprivation also. Because the love is, this is the natural expression of the love of the mother for the child. And in Kali Yuga, it's simply denied as inconvenient or inappropriate or socially out of place. But this is natural.
And the studies made it so that the breast cancer keeps growing and growing and growing. It's something that is moving, not something that was part of the world. Breast cancer is basically on the women that are not wanting to breastfeed.
I'm not in the medical profession, and I'd be reluctant to draw causal connections between these things without being well informed. Possible, but I really don't know.
I have two brothers who are both teachers of medical school.
Okay, you've got to, their authorities, yeah. And they draw a connection.
Because South America doesn't have so much, it's more of Europe.
Acha.
Also, India is very low.
Huh. So the medical, your medical brothers are drawing a connection.
It's a study that they make because they're trying to do the people in South America who are like simple, not to get into this habit of powder milk.
Yeah. This is like we become more sophisticated, and you know we think that we're smart. You know these stupid people down in the tropics somewhere in India or South America, they're doing things the old way, just because their civilization hasn't yet advanced, and their women, instead of being business executives, are chained to their children and husbands. But this is the result of your liberation, that you no longer have to feed your children. Instead, you can have cancer. Answer of the breast. This is, again, material advancement. Huh? Yes?
There's anabasa, main symptoms of bhava. But then there's these other anabasa, like here, these physical symptoms, like shantira, avyakta, kalatvam, iraktir.
They're not specifically anubhav. They're symptoms. They're signs that one has reached the bhava stage of devotional service.
Oh, I thought that I have in my old shloka book. There are also anubhavs, but that's incorrect.
Let me think about it. Avyarta kala tvam virakti. Yeah, they would seem to be also. Sure.
Within that list, aren't these, tears shooting from the eyes and milk coming from the breasts.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to be some differentiation.
Well, if you look at those symptoms of ecstasy, essentially what that discussion is about is that people, they see, tears from the eyes and rolling on the ground and all of that stuff, and they say, oh, this person has reached an advanced stage of devotional service. Because you can see from his physical symptoms, anubhav. And Rupa Goswami says, well, wait a second here. These symptoms can be imitated. Anyone can roll on the ground, put a little chili in the corner of your eye, and you'll show, tears.
But these are the ones that can't be imitated.
This is a different story. To show the sign of virakti, detachment. To be always engaged in not wasting time, to be always eager to nama gana sada ruchi, to always have a taste for hearing and chanting the holy name, want to stay always in the holy place. These are symptoms of ecstasy that are more reliable. So he doesn't specifically cite them when he's discussing anubhav, but he points out that if you're looking for outward symptoms of a person who's on the bhava platform, bhava means ecstatic platform, he's no longer on the platform of sadhana, just following the practice, but he's actually feeling something. He's actually in the advanced stage of feeling emotional ecstasy. Then look at these things. How he's engaging all his time. How he's showing the signs of detachment. How he's always chanting the glories of the Lord. Look to these things. Then when he discusses Anubhav, he talks about, again, different physical symptoms. But they're in the context of there being a component. Bhav has these components. Vibhav, Anubhav, Stayibhav. That's all. We discussed the first division of nectar devotion. These come in the second division, the southern division. Yes?
Can we say that these symptoms are primary and the other secondary?
No. It's not a question of primary and secondary. He just gives them as symptoms that you can rely on. If you're going to be a scientist in the science of devotional service, he says, look to these things. Look to these things. Tears anyone can show. But detachment, when push comes to shove, this is, when you want to separate the sheep from the goats, look at this. Because they're crying and howling. I gave the example in Nectar of Devotion class that we would be on Padayatra, especially in Orissa where there are a lot of kirtan parties. And there'd be these ecstatic kirtan parties that would meet us and they'd chant, they'd dance, and they'd get to the village and, put their madangas down and have a smoke and, So you have to, of course they were chanting, that's there. But these things Rupa Goswami points out. These particular symptoms. Okay? We're moving on? Ata vishat svabhavanam sarvakamam anuttamam prasada yatra patninam sahasrani chashodasha. Thereafter, the Lord entered his palaces, which were perfect to the fullest extent. His wives lived in them, and they numbered over 16,000. Prabhupada comments, in the palaces of the Lord there was nothing wanting for fulfilling all the desires of the Lord. The Lord is unlimited, and therefore his desires are also unlimited, and the supply is also unlimited. Everything being unlimited, it is concisely described here as sarvakamam, or full with all desirable equipment. The palaces were made of the best marble, illuminated by jewels, decorated by curtains and carpets of velvet and silk, nicely bedecked and embroidered with gold lace. Well, the Lord has all power, so he was able to display. These are all displays of his power. The palaces, the decorations, the wives, it's all a manifestation of his own energy. Swabhavanam, his own palaces, which were made of his own energy, and therefore anuttamam, perfect to the fullest extent. Anything else here?
Once, one man was asking Srila Prabhupada, what's the purpose behind this world? And Srila Prabhupada...
Behind
this world.
Behind the world, yeah.
Yeah, and Srila Prabhupada replied, this world is created for enjoyment. And man became very excited. And then Srila Prabhupada said, not for your enjoyment, for Krishna's enjoyment.
Yeah. Prabhupada said, even if you think Krishna is lusty, he's unlimitedly lusty. Sarvakama. That verse is there, akama, sarvakama, but who can actually be sarvakama? Desiring everything. The Lord is sarvakama. He has unlimited desires. That's said here. The Lord's unlimited, he has unlimited desires.
He's akama too.
He's also akama. But he's not moksha-kama. Anything else? Okay. Mm-hmm. Should we have a break? All right, let's have a break. 5 minutes. We're moving forward and we're in text 31. Patyapatim prosya grahan upagatam vilokya sangyata mano mahotsava uttastur arat sahasa sanashayat sakam bratayar vridita lochananana. The queens of Lord Sri Krishna rejoiced within their minds to see their husband home after a long period abroad. The queens got up at once from their seats and meditations. As was socially customary, they covered their faces shyly and looked about coyly. Actually, that coyly is not the greatest word. Vridita, Prabhupada's original word was stealthily, which is not the right word either. Stealthily means, kind of a hidden way, usually a predatorial way, the way a tiger moves is stealthy. You know, when he's hunting after prey.
Stealth, they have these stealth. The U.S. Air Force.
Yes, stealth bomber. It sneaks up on you, the stealth bomber. You can't detect it with radar.
Yeah, radar can't. It looks like a really hellish machine.
Yeah, it is a hellish machine. So Prabhupada said they looked about stealthily, which is really not the word. So the editor made it coyly, which may also not be exactly the word. It's Vridita dictionary says means shyly, modestly, bashfully. That's more like it.
Doesn't koi have like a fake sort of
kind of thing? Yeah, koi has a kind of a it's a game. Artfully or affectedly shy. Coquettish, that's really what it is. That's what koi is, you know.
It's flirty.
Yeah, it's really you're being shy but you're not really being shy. And okay, there may have been an element here of that also, but it's not specifically.
So is it an English word?
Coquette, yeah, it's a French word from French. It's a Latin word.
It's a Latin.
It has a Latin root, and it comes to English via French, I think. But anyway, koi is there. We're not going to complain too much.
Trying to attract him.
Yeah. Maybe we won't speculate too much about what was in their minds, but vridita, which is the word here, means bashfully, shyly, modestly. Coquette is not really very modest.
No.
But vridita means, right? Vridita means that they seems to mean genuinely modest, bashful, shy. Let's see. Patnyapatim prosya grahan upagatam. Prabhupada points out that Krishna expanded himself as there were 16,000, upward of 16,000 queens. Krishna expanded himself into 16,108. He can expand himself in as many forms of spiritual identity as he desires, even though he is one without a second. It's confirmed by the Shruti Mantra that the Absolute is one alone, and yet he becomes many as soon as he so desires. So this is, and Prabhupada discusses that at some length, Krishna's capability of expanding himself. This is called Vai Bhava, that's what you were thinking of, or the transcendental potency of the Lord. And therefore he's also called Yogeshwara, because he can do these things. Unbelievers become astonished to learn that Lord Krishna married more than 16,000 queens, because they think of Lord Krishna as one of them, and measure the potency of the Lord by their own limited potency. One should know, therefore, that the Lord is never on the level of the living beings, who are but expansions of his marginal energy. The queens were also expansions of his internal potency, and thus the potent and potencies are perpetually exchanging transcendental pleasures, known as pastimes of the Lord. This is Prabhupada's definition of pastimes, exchanges between the potent Lord and his internal potencies. One should not therefore become astonished to learn that the Lord married so many wives. On the contrary, one should affirm that even if the Lord marries 16,000 million wives, he is not completely manifesting his unlimited and inexhaustible potency. He married only 16,000 wives. So nice, yes. Married only 16,000 wives, just to set a record. This Sakam Vrataya Vridita Lochananana, this Vrata, Prabhupada explains that a woman whose husband is away from home holds back from dressing nicely and taking part in social engagements. In Krishna's pastimes, there's some Krishna's birth ceremony, you remember that? Who was the, this was Rohini. It's mentioned specifically that she dressed nicely for the festivities of Krishna's birth, which was unusual. Why? Yeah, Vasudeva was in Mathura and in jail at that. She's the wife of Vasudeva. He was away and in jail. And she's dressing nicely and decorating herself nicely. But it was because it was a celebration for Krishna. Otherwise, wouldn't she? The idea is that the woman should dress nicely to please the husband, not to please the public. When the queens saw Krishna from a distance, Arad, they got up at once, Sahasa. They'd been absorbed, this is also Anubhav. They'd been absorbed in meditation on Krishna, and now he'd come. And seeing him, Vilokya, created a great festival within their minds. Mano Mahotsava. Seeing Krishna is a great festival for the mind. And Vridita, so they were stealthily, bashfully seeing Krishna. And Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur describes their response. There was a regular psychological reaction on the occasion. First of all, rising from their seats, although they wanted to see their husband, they were deterred because of feminine shyness. But due to strong ecstasy, they overcame that stage of weakness and became caught up with the idea of embracing the Lord. And this thought factually made them unconscious of their surrounding environment. This prime state of ecstasy annihilated all other formalities and social conventions, and thus they escaped all stumbling blocks on the path of meeting the Lord. And that is the perfect stage of meeting the Lord of the soul, Sri Krishna. You can see the deep absorption here. They were deeply thinking, the whole time he's away, they're absorbed in thinking of him. And then he came, and they really wanted to see him, but they were shy. But then they were so caught up with the idea of embracing him that they just, everything else faded out. They just saw themselves in Krishna. And that was that's described. Anything else here?
I was just thinking how Srila Prabhupada was so actively guiding these social conventions.
Expertly?
Hiding these emotions most of the time. Never.
Oh, uh-huh. Yeah, the devotees hide these things. They don't flaunt their inner feelings. Yes?
Also in regards to this point that some people become astonished or protesting that why Krishna has so many wives or why he dancing with other people's wives tonight. One man was telling that to show Prabhupada how we can worship somebody who is basically the Bhaji and you know, dancing and doing like that with women, and show Prabhupada said, do you have a wife? And this man said, yeah, you have. And then show Prabhupada said, you know that everything belongs to God, including your wife. Actually, you are the Bhaji, you live with his wife, not that he's he's enjoying his property, and you're the Bhaji.
I told about that story about Mahavishnu Maharaj in the class. I guess I would tell it. Okay. This was told to me by my godbrother, Ajay Das, who had been in Gujarat, where Mahavishnu Maharaj is building a temple in Rajkot. And one big man, very wealthy man, came there. And he came to see Maharaj. And he said that the temple is so beautiful. And when I see Krishna, he said, you know, I get tears in my eyes, it's so beautiful. And Maharaj just lambasted him. He said, you're a thief, you're stealing Krishna's property, you're having sex with your wife who also belongs to Krishna, and then you come here and you try to convince me that you're feeling love for Krishna, you nonsense rascal. Just blasted the guy. His wife was very happy, I also belong to Krishna. And the guy was flabbergasted. He didn't know what to say. He just left. And then he came back later and he brought his sons with him. He said, offer obeisances to him. He, you know, accepted that actually he'd been put in his place. His wife also belongs to Krishna. Everything belongs to Krishna.
Was it elderly Mahavishnu?
Yeah, elderly. Yeah, the Prabhupada said one time, he said, because I'm older, I can get away with these things. You know, I can say these things. So Mahavishnu Maharaj also, you know, who can, especially in Indian society, when someone is older like that, you can't argue, you have to, that age is respected. But he can say anything. And he fully exercises the privilege. Tamatma jaya drishtibir antaratmana Duranta bhava paribheri parire bhire patim niruddhamapyashrabad ambunetrayor vilajjatinam prabhubharya vaiklavat. The insuperable ecstasy was so strong that the queens, who were shy, first embraced the Lord in the innermost recesses of their hearts. Then they embraced him visually, and then they sent their sons to embrace him, which is equal to personal embracing. But O chief of the Brigus, though they tried to restrain their feelings, they inadvertently shed tears. Any questions here? Yes.
Just from the previous verse, the Purport Prabhupada says that the queens were expanding to his internal property.
Mm-hmm.
So that may be confusing that they're also God.
Why?
Because are they, what is the wives of Krishna, what is their...
Their potency. Potency. Shakti. Potency means Shakti. So how is Shakti God? Shakti and Shaktiman.
But they're not Jivas.
No. The Shakti, internal energy. They're God in the sense that Sarva Kalavidam Brahma, everything is God. The rock is also God, the tree is also God, everything is God. But there's a difference between, just as the sun, everything is the sun. Cloud is also the sun, the sunshine is also the sun, everything's sun. But then when you analyze it, we're in fire. The coals are also fire, the flames are also fire, smoke is also fire. But then you have to analyze, no, by just putting my pot in the smoke is not going to make it cook. And the coals are not the same as the fire. So in that way we analyze what's what. So the Lord has different, you can say, parts, although he's not divisible, but he has his energies. Prasya Shakti Vividaya Vishruyate. The energies are expanded from the Lord, and they're, what is that? Both equal to and not equal to Krishna. Beda Beda Prakash. Although the queens thought they were better than the Lord. They thought they had him under their control. That's another thing.
That's the expansion of the pleasure potency, is that it?
Hmm. Yeah. Radharani expands, Trimati Radharani expands as all the goddesses of fortune.
So are they each individual persons, or are they Srimati Radharani just a different flavor? Or?
Yeah, just like Balaram, he's an individual person, but he's just Krishna with a different flavor. That's part of what Krishna's ability to expand entails, that he can expand in different forms who are also individuals. But Balaram, so much so that Krishna wants Arjuna to marry Subhadra, and Balaram wants Duryodhana to marry Subhadra. And Krishna's favoring the Kauravas, the Pandavas, Balaram's favoring the Kauravas. So there's some, and with this business of chastising Rukmi, you know, oh Krishna, you shouldn't be doing it. So there's so many things like that. He's an individual, Balaram, but that individual is not different from Krishna. He actually is Krishna. But, or again, when Krishna expands, it's all the boys in Vrindavan. They all have their individual features, but they're all Krishna. So these queens all have their individual features, but they're all expansions of the internal potency. And still they're individuals. For that matter, we're all expansions of Krishna. But we all have our individual natures.
The Shakti Tattva never misuses the free will.
Never misuses?
Free will.
Well, Shakti Tattva, we're also Shakti Tattva, we're also energy of Krishna. But that energy has different divisions. We're the marginal division, Vivinamsha. So that marginal division does have the capability of misusing independence. But the internal energy proper never misuses it. Yes?
Still, can the Jiva become the wife of Krishna?
Can the jiva become the wife of Krishna? Seems so. I don't know of any thing that says she can. Relationship is available. I don't know why. Why not? Yes.
Sometimes the karmis put this question: can God create a mountain that He Himself cannot lift?
Oh yeah, right.
And this one is a very good answer. One can create the mountain and the other one can lift it.
Yeah, or Prabhupada said that he can create something so heavy he can't lift it, and then he can lift it. Krishna can do everything. Okay, let's...
Can I just ask a
small
point? Mm-hmm. Here it said, or speak among the Brigus. Who are we referring to?
They would here be referring to...
This is Sita Goswami addressing Shrinakar Rishi.
Yes.
And why is he called chief among the Brigus?
I assume he's coming in Brigu...
Dynasty.
Yeah, Gotra.
I think he addressed me that earlier also. I'm not sure, but then in parentheses it said, well, I can't remember exactly where...
They're all the sages, or for that matter, you know, respectable people, they can trace back their descent from a particular sage. So here, Bhrigu. Okay? Yadyapyasa parshvagato rahogatas tatapitas yangri yugam navam navam pade pade kabirame tatat padach chalapi yachchir na jahati karhichit. Although Lord Sri Krishna was constantly by their sides, as well as exclusively alone, his feet appeared to them to be newer and newer. The goddess of fortune, although by nature always restless and moving, could not quit the Lord's feet. So what woman can be detached from those feet, having once taken shelter of them? Srila Rupa Goswami cites this verse as evidence of quality 53 of Krishna. What quality? Now, ever fresh. In the material world, husband and wife get used to one another. Their relations turn humdrum. From an expectant and exciting beginning, the marriage gradually turns plodding, if not outright bitter. And so, especially in the West, we commonly have divorce, with partners looking for new partners, even in old age. But in contrast, Krishna is navam navam, ever fresh. In materialistic life, even middle-aged and older women struggling to bolster their fading looks with too much makeup go out looking for new prospects. And who wants them? But the goddess of fortune, whom everyone wants, sticks always to the lotus feet of She's always young, she's always Shri, beautiful. She's the source of all wealth. But she's known for being fickle. Chala, she's always moving around. As Prabhupada says, in the material world, no one is permanently fortunate, however clever one may be. And he talks about different empires that have come and gone, their fortunes have evaporated. But the goddess of fortune never leaves the lotus feet of Krishna. Najahati Karyachit. So what woman can be detached from those feet? As Srila Prabhupada points out, what woman can be detached from those feet, having once taken shelter of them? And every living entity is a woman. That is female. Prakriti. So once one has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, how can you leave? That's point. Some question, comment. Okay. Evam Rapanam Kritibhara Janmanam Akshohini Pili Parivritta Tejasam Vithaya Vairam Shvasano Yatanalam Mito Vidheno Parato Nirayutha. The Lord was pacified after killing those kings who were burdensome to the earth. They were puffed up with their military strength, their horses, elephants, chariots, infantry. He himself was not a party in the fight. He simply created hostility between the powerful administrators, and they fought among themselves. He was like the wind, which causes friction between bamboos, and so sparks a fire. I'd really like to read this whole purport. I wonder if we have time. We don't really. Prabhupada talks about how they become puffed up, and the Lord engages them in fighting among themselves over ideological conflicts and exhaust themselves of all powers. The misuse of human energy is prominent to saner living beings. Become perturbed by the awkward situation created by the vicious administrators who are simply burdens of the earth, and the Lord appears by his internal potency just to save them. Prabhupada points out No one can establish peace and prosperity in the world by prudent actions or by speculative philosophy or ideology. The only way is to surrender unto the Supreme Lord and thus become free from the illusion of the deluding energy. Unfortunately, persons engaged in destructive work are unable to surrender to the personality of Godhead. They are all fools of the first order. They are the lowest of the human species of life. They are robbed of their knowledge, although apparently they seem academically educated. They are all of the demonic mentality, always challenging the supreme power of the Lord. Those who are very materialistic, always hankering after material power and strength, are undoubtedly fools of the first order, because they have no information of the living energy, and being ignorant of that supreme spiritual science, they are absorbed in material science, which ends with the end of the material body. They are the lowest of human beings, because the human life is especially meant for reestablishing the lost relation with the Lord, and they miss this opportunity by being engaged in material activities. They're robbed of their knowledge because even after prolonged speculation, they cannot reach the stage of knowing the personality of Godhead, the summum bonum of everything. And all of them are men of demonic principle, and they suffer the consequences, as did such materialistic heroes as Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, and others. Now, in texts 35 through 39, the rest of the chapter, we learn more about the nature of the Lord's dealing with his consorts, his wives. So, Esha Naraloke Smin Avatirna Svamayaya Neme Sri Ratnakutasto Bhagavan Prakrito Yata. That Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, appeared on this planet by his internal potency and enjoyed himself amongst competent women as if he were engaging in mundane affairs. Srila Jiva Goswami comments on all these verses in Priti Sandarbha. He says the word Svamayaya means with mercy to his devotees, and that mercy means love, the love that makes him wish to please them. Avatirna means all the incarnations of the Lord descend to the material world impelled by that mercy and love. And Sri Ratna Kutastha means that the women, with their great love, bring the Lord under their control. Reme means because of that love the Lord enjoys pastimes with them. He does not enjoy pastimes with them because of the love, lust that is so well known in the material world. Here the word Ratna, he says, indicates that these women are very qualified to associate with the Lord. Sri Ratna. Ratna means jewel. Because of their great love for him. Although the Lord's pastimes with these women is very different from anything in the material world, superficially they seem like the activities of the material world. This is described here by the words Prakrito Yata. Although the Lord's pastimes may seem like ordinary activities of the material world, the idea that he is impelled by lust is here refuted. And Prabhupada discusses these same points, that Krishna, although appearing like an ordinary, he married exactly like us, but his marriage is neither mundane nor limited by our experience in the conditioned state. His wives, therefore, appear like mundane women, but factually they are all transcendentally liberated souls, perfect manifestations of internal energy. Anything else here?
The women who became the wives of the Lord are certainly not ordinary women, because to get divorced as one husband is the result of many millions of births and blessings.
It's possible, and also from another point of view, it's even about the eternally liberated souls, these things are sometimes said. what fortunate pious activities must they have performed? Uddama bhava pishunama lava guhasa vridava loka nihato marano piyasam sammuya chapa majahat pramadottamasta yasyendriyam bimatitam bimatitum kuhukair nasheku. Although the queen's beautiful smiles and furtive glances were all spotless and exciting, and although they could conquer Cupid himself by making him give up his bow in frustration, and although even the tolerant Shiva could fall victim to them, still, despite all their magical feats and attractions, they could not agitate the senses of the Lord. Again, Jiva Goswami comments, he says, Hasa Vrida Avaloka means with affectionate, pure, and charming glances, and Nihata means conquered by the power of the weapon that is the glory of those glances. And the word samuhya chapa majahat, chapa means bow, yeah? Samuhya chapam, yeah, bows, are explained by these words, bru pallavam dhanurapanga tarangitani bahana. A beautiful girl's eyebrows are like a vine, or like an archer's bow. Her sidelong glances are like waves, or like arrows shot from the bow of her eyebrows. This is Jiva Goswami.
Oh.
Lord Kapildev also says, this is not Jiva. Balam me paschamaya ya stri maya jayano disham ya karoti pada krantan ruvi drimpena kevalam. Just try to understand the mighty strength of my maya in the shape of woman, who by the mere movement of her eyebrows can keep even the greatest conquerors of the world under her grip. Mark Antony being the usual example, totally bewildered by Cleopatra. Those who know the history there really blew it big time. Bewildered by Cleopatra. So this is the power. But Jiva Goswami continues by saying that these weapons are ineffective in the dealings of the Lord and his consorts. The word pramadottama here means women filled with the bliss of the most exalted spiritual love. If some women not possessing this exalted spiritual love try to agitate the Supreme Lord's senses with sidelong glances or other kinds of trickery used in this world, these women will certainly fail. This is described here by the words yas yendriyam vimatitum kuhakaya nasheku. This means that the Lord's desires become awakened only by pure spiritual love, and the Lord's activities are very different from those of an ordinary lusty man of this world. And again, I wanted to read Prabhupada's purport here, which is really wonderful, but our time is going to run out on us. That's the problem. But Prabhupada reaches the same conclusion. He says, the queens could not satisfy the Lord by their feminine attractiveness, but they satisfied him by their sincere affection and service. Only by unalloyed transcendental loving service could they satisfy the Lord, and the Lord was pleased to treat them as wives in reciprocation. That's the point here. The Lord appeared like a mundane husband, but factually his relation with his wives was transcendental, pure, and unconditioned by the modes of material nature. That's what we're meant to understand from this whole set of verses. Krishna is completely on the transcendental platform, and what appears to us like ordinary marital dealings was far beyond anything of this material world. It was again an exchange of a devotional exchange between the Lord and the Lord's energies. Okay. I'm again moving along a little swiftly here so that we finish. Tamayam manyate loko yasangam apisanginam Atma upamyena manujam yaprinvanam yato buddha. The common materialistic conditioned souls speculate that the Lord is one of them. Out of their ignorance, they think that the Lord is affected by matter, although he is unattached. Well, that makes things quite clear. Atmavan manyate jagat. People judge everyone else by their own standard. And that goes on here. Well, the Lord must be something like me. And they miss the boat. The mental speculators compare everything from the standpoint of experimental knowledge of their own selves. Thus, when the Lord is found to act like an ordinary person in matrimonial bondage, they consider him to be like one of them, without considering that the Lord can at once marry 16,000 wives or more. Due to a poor fund of knowledge, they accept one side of the picture while disbelieving the other. Right? They accept that the Lord can act like an ordinary husband. That part then they'll criticize that, but they don't consider on the other side that he had 16,000 such wives. And what does that mean? So Prabhupada said that due to ignorance only, they always think of Lord Krishna as like themselves and make their own conclusions, which are absurd and unauthentic from the version of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what it means. It means they're idiots. Manyate jagat. That everyone thinks of the whole world in terms of like to be like himself. Okay. Etad ishanamishasya prakritis stopi tadgunai yujyate sadatmas tire yata bhutis tadashraya. This is the divinity of the personality of Godhead. He is not affected by the qualities of material nature, even though he is in contact with them. Similarly, the devotees who have taken shelter of the Lord do not become influenced by material qualities. Yes?
I have a question.
Prabhupada's
carefully screened the literatures that he wanted us to read based upon our advancement. There are literatures that very in great detail describe the pastime between Krishna and the gopis. And I've never personally read them. But from what I understand, that they graphically described acts that seem similar to the materialists. So if one isn't on a liberated platform, then he'll misunderstand it because it will create a lusty consciousness. So my question is, why, you know, in the course of arranging for the
why do they write such things? When
what's the purpose behind that? I mean, because the Lord performs these pastimes to attract the minds of the conditioned soul to start union, chanting, glorifying the Lord, purifying. So these literatures just seem so tricky. They just seem like you guys are really on the razor's edge to approach them. But I guess, you know, someone on a very exalted platform could relish them.
Yeah, they'll appreciate them.
Yeah.
These are meant for the paramahansas, not for the ordinary people.
Right. And, but so that in paramahansas, that helps them to go deeper into their relationship with Krishna.
Yeah. And therefore, the ordinary people are not meant to read these things.
It's another kind of language.
Anubhava is an impetus, that's vibhava. But it's to be relished by the paramahansas, not by the ordinary persons. If we try to relish these things, we'll simply think of sex. Therefore, the qualification is to be purified, freed from these kind of anarthas in the heart. Otherwise, these ones not fit for reading these things.
So, Bhaktivinoda Saraswati wanted to publish some of the
Yeah, that's a famous story. Publish one book. Finally, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, all right, you can publish one copy.
What was that, the Govinda?
Maybe it was Govinda. Something. One of those confidential things. Finally, he said, all right, you can publish one copy. Yeah, that we have to have some understanding of what we're fit for.
And then, you know, if there's some groups that are lowering the the level of qualification, make it readily available. And but then at the conclusion, it strikes me, because this is what, you know, kind of the warning, is that it will eventually lead to gross.
I'm sure that Bennett's law will apply. Bennett's law will apply. Mr. Bennett was my English teacher in about junior high school.
Oh,
very, very nice man. And he used to tell us, you know, because all the kids goof off in class and so on. He said, I've told you this many times, and I'm telling you again, and you'll always remember it. He said, now you can play and goof off, do whatever you like. He said, but I'm telling you, I've told you many times, I'm telling you again, it all comes out in the wash. That's Bennett's law. You're shaking your head. It's an American expression. It means truth will out. The truth will come out.
Yeah.
It all comes out in the wash. Means sooner or later, everything will come out. You'll see everything for what it really is. It just takes some time, and you know, time will tell. And so, yeah, we'll see how these relishers do. Some may do all right, but we wish them well. Okay, we're moving a little bit along here. There's, in this verse, Prakritis Topi Tad Gunai. Although he's in touch with women, he's not affected by their qualities. It can be read that way. Prakritis Ta, he's connected with women, but Tad Gunai, Na Yudyate, he doesn't get involved. He's not affected by their qualities. Or you can read it, although he's in touch with material nature, he's unaffected by its modes. As Prabhupada says, he's beyond the range of material affection. Actually, he's in contact with material qualities because he's the ultimate source of everything. Yet he is above the actions of such qualities. He's known, therefore, as Yogeshwara, or the master of mystic power, or in other words, the all-powerful. And this is the ultimate manifestation of material qualities, you know, the beautiful eyebrows of the woman, her beautiful glances, her smile, this all represents the ultimate power of the material nature. And Krishna is married to 16,108 people manifesting all of these qualities. So he's in touch with all of these, in intimate touch with all of these women, and he's not affected. He's not affected by lust, he's not affected by passion, he's not affected by material attraction, he's not affected by anything. That's Yogeshwara. You really have to be a mystic yogi to do that. Be married to 16,108 of the most gorgeous women in the universe and not be affected. You know, one man's married to a halfway decent looking girl, he's totally, you know, dangling on like a puppet. And here's Krishna, he's married to 16,108 of these ultra gorgeous princesses who are just completely devoted to him and who, you know, got quivers full of the most powerful arrows known to Cupid, and he's not affected. Jiva Goswami says the words Nayujate Yata Bhutis Tadashraya mean the Supreme Lord's consciousness is not like the consciousness of the conditioned souls who've taken shelter of the material nature. Or these words may be also interpreted to mean the great devotees who've taken shelter of the Supreme Lord have a consciousness like the Lord's. Even though they reside in the material world, they are not influenced by the modes of material nature. Those are two readings you can get from the Yujjate Yata Bhutis Tadashraya. The Lord's consciousness is not like that of the conditioned souls, or the great devotees who've taken shelter of the Lord have consciousness like His. So either way, they're not influenced by the modes of material nature. And Prabhupada describes that very vividly in the purport. He talks about the Goswamis and how they gave up their wealth and aristocracy and superficially appeared like beggars, although they were the most wealthy. He talks about the Mahabhagavatas, who are not affected by any material dualities. And then he talks about even devotees who show some appearance of being fallen. Prabhupada said that the Lord protects such a devotee always because of his rendering service, and the fallen conditions are to be considered accidental and temporary. They'll vanish in no time. And we have 5 minutes more for the last verse. Tamenire vala mutha strainam chanu vritam raha apramana vido bhartur isharam matayo yata. The simple and delicate women truly thought that Lord Sri Krishna, their beloved husband, followed them and was dominated by them. They were unaware of the extent of the glories of their husband, as the atheists are unaware of him as the supreme controller. Here, Srila Jiva Goswami says, someone may ask at this point, do the Lord's consorts know that the Lord possesses this great opulence of detachment? If they know, then their love for him in their confidential pastimes with him would certainly be broken to pieces. Fearing someone might speak these words, the author of Srimad Bhagavatam gives us this verse. And Srila Prabhupada nicely explains that these are all arrangements made by the Lord's internal energy to provide for his pastimes. And finally, Srila Prabhupada says, even the personal associates of the Lord do not know him perfectly well, so what do the thesis writers or mental speculators know about the transcendental glories of the Lord? He's talking about Matayoyata, Ishwaram Matayoyata. The mental speculators present different theses as to his becoming the causes of the creation, the ingredients of the creation, or the material and efficient cause of the creation, etc. But all this is but partial knowledge about the Lord. Factually, they're as ignorant as the common man. The Lord can be known by the mercy of the Lord only, and by no other means. Since the dealings of the Lord with his wives are based on pure transcendental love and devotion, the wives are all on the transcendental plane without material contamination. Any questions here? Yes?
It is amazing that even though the Lord is not attached at all, he also is not unconsiderate or not unwilling to make them feel very good.
Oh yeah.
He interacts with them so nicely that they are in love with him, with himself at the same time.
This is the art to, of course, from both sides. The art for a woman is to have your husband completely under control and think that he's in charge. Right? To have him thinking that he's in charge the whole time that he's under your control. And the other side, the art is to have your wife completely under your control while at the same time that she's thinking that she's running everything. So here Krishna perfected the art. The wives are thinking that Krishna is completely dominated by them, that they've completely swayed him, completely got him, you know, all those arrows, all those looks, all those smiles, they've got him. Meanwhile, he's got 16,108 of them, and he's totally detached. But by his internal energy, he has an energy they don't know about. He's got this pastime energy, yoga maya, by which he's able to create the whole scene by which they don't understand what's going on, and they think that he's just like an ordinary husband, completely under their control. So this is happening by the Lord's potency to provide for the transcendental exchanges. As Jiva Goswami points out, if they knew how powerful Krishna was, that would spoil everything. If they knew he was completely detached and didn't need them at all, that would spoil the whole feeling. So here, by power of Yoga Maya, they thought that he's just like a henpecked husband. They thought that. But actually, he's the supreme, independent, unaffected personality of God. He's in touch with the entire material energy, indirectly. But he's not affected.
There's some, as the queens are influenced by Yoga Maya, Krishna also is.
Yeah, Krishna also surrenders to the Svabhaviki Gana Bala Kriyacha. Yoga Maya, it's not that he always has to think, okay, now I'll have Yoga Maya do this, now I'll have Yoga Maya do that. She's automatically working according to the desire of Krishna. So then Krishna, all he has to do is completely absorb himself in the pastimes. He himself enjoys. Otherwise, if he's always thinking, now I'm going to do this, now I'm going to do that.
I'm detached.
I don't care, you know. But he himself takes the role, something like an actor. In order to effectively act, you know, the method actors and so on, they have to completely surrender themselves to their role so that they feel like they're, you know, Napoleon, or they feel like they're Joan of Arc, or they feel like they're whoever it is that's the character. So Krishna himself feels these transcendental roles. He feels like he's the son of Yashoda Mayi. He feels all of these things. He actually surrenders himself in these roles because of the devotion of the devotee. Yes?
I always think of Krishna as being very attached to his devotee, but of course he's detached.
He has six opulences. One of them is detachment. He exhibited that during the rest, when he's with the gopis. He picks up and goes. They're all just searching for him. Where are you? What's going on? They all came to see him. He was with all of them, and he just takes off. But that's detachment. Krishna has all detachment in full. But at the same time, he has all compassion, all love. So he reciprocates with the devotee. Therefore, that discussion is there, that it's not like he's obliged exactly, like the ordinary person in a material relationship. He's independent, but out of love.
Atmaram.
Or, from another point of view, yes, he's attracted, it's only by devotion. Therefore this point that the materialists, by their mental speculations, can never understand it. Because Krishna is only understood and only attracted by devotion. That's Krishna's internal energy. That's described, that's stronger than Krishna. More attractive than Krishna. But none different. These verses are very important, this chapter, because later we're going to come to the 10th canto, where all of these things are described in considerable detail, how the Lord is dealing with his wives, how the Lord is dealing with the Brajvasis, and we have to understand it with purified consciousness. We have to understand it with the knowledge that Krishna, who's performing all these pastimes, is nothing like an ordinary person, not motivated by the ordinary passions of a human being. These are all activities of devotional service, and by understanding it properly, we'll become fit to relish these activities. So here in the first canto, the groundwork is being laid, the proper understanding is being given. So these verses are significant.
Basically, isn't it up until that, from now, from what this chapter you just covered, then you won't really hear about Krishna again.
Well, in the third canto, in the very beginning, there's a summary of Krishna's pastimes. It goes on for a couple of chapters, and Vidura is there, but that's brief. And then after that's the last we hear about it for a considerable time. Is that a scratch back scratching, or is that a hand in the air? Okay. Yeah, last.
Because from our material conditioning, we also think that detachment in the eyes of Krishna, I mean, like us, is like Icha Klesha. It's not detachment.
Yeah, his detachment is not exactly the same as our detachment. Yeah, the Lord is simultaneously detached and fully involved. He's detached and fully involved simultaneously. He's detached from the material nature and he's running the whole thing. He's detached from all his wives and he's reciprocating with them all simultaneously. This is Krishna. All right. Thank you all very much.